Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Christian Cantrell, author of the new novel, Scorpion. Christian, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new novel, Scorpion, how would you describe the novel?
Well, it's usually described as a near future thriller. So I usually say that it's about 70% thriller, 30% science fiction, with a thick layer of character on top. So it's about a woman named Quinn Mitchell, who's a data analyst for the CIA. Her job is to write queries against indices or data collections that are compiled by intelligence agencies in an attempt to uncover patterns to assist in investigations. So she's what I call a 9-to-5 spy, which means she's part of the intelligence community during the day. And then spends her evenings and weekends in the quiet suburbs of Washington, D.C. At the beginning of the novel, she's part of the Nuclear Terrorism Nonproliferation Task Force, trying to recover, you know, unaccounted for fissile material before it can fall into the hands of terrorists. And at the same time, Interpol, which is the International Criminal Police Organization, is looking for an analyst in helping a serial killer, because this international serial killer who they have no leads on whatsoever. And so they need a fresh perspective. They need a new analyst. And so they come to Quinn. So Quinn sort of goes from this, you know, very quiet, sedate, predictable, comfortable cubicle job, into this sort of field mission where she's chasing a serial killer all over the world.
And so do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to writing Scorpion?
I do. So I grew up in Northern Virginia, which is where I am now. And I've always been surrounded by, you know, people in the intelligence community, you know, these sort of, you know, 9-to-5 spies and people who can't tell you what they do for a living. You go to a party or to a barbecue and you ask somebody what they do for a living, and they'll just say, well, they work for the government. And that usually means don't ask any more questions. And I've always just found that really interesting. Actually, it's funny. Just last night, in fact, I was out to dinner and I was sitting next to a table where, a bunch of people were talking about, trips they'd taken to China and, how they had to protect their laptops. These were obviously government contractors and the measures they have to take to protect their laptops when they don't have them with them. And, you know, it's a very interesting area. Especially really since since the terrorist attacks in 2001, this area really, became, a huge, there've been a tremendous amount of investment and innovation around government contracting as opposed to more consumer technology. So that's where I grew up. Now that's not a world that I'm really part of. I work for Adobe. I've worked at Adobe for 19 years. I've lived in San Francisco. You know, my sort of technological background is more sort of West Coast rather than East Coast. I went through this period where I was traveling a great deal, because I've always been back to San Francisco. And I was traveling, I went through one period where I was going just from hotel to hotel. I was doing some speaking engagements. And I started thinking about how cool it'd be if, you know, generally we think of people who are very wealthy as having homes all over the world. And I started thinking how cool it'd be is if you were so wealthy that the whole world was your home. Like you actually didn't own any homes at all. You just sort of stayed in a hotel for as long as you like. And when you got tired of that city, you moved to a different city. And I sort of started wondering, you know, what would someone like that do for a living? And that's where I came up with this idea of this sort of international assassin. He's known as the elite assassin in the novel. His name is Ranbir. So in 2010, I decided to bring these ideas together, this sort of 9-to-5 spy, person who lives in the suburbs, but works as part of the intelligence apparatus during the day. And then this very sophisticated, very cosmopolitan international serial killer. And at the same time, I'd just written a novel, and I decided I wanted to do some short fiction. So I challenged myself to write short stories around the most sort of tired and played out and sort of stereotypical science fiction tropes that you could possibly imagine, but to do them in a way that was completely fresh and scientifically plausible, and that were, you know, unrecognizable as sort of existing in these subgenres. And one of those was time travel. And so I took all of these ideas together. There's an element of time travel in the story as well. And I combined them all into a short story called The Epic Index. That story ended up kind of bouncing around Hollywood a little bit in various manifestations. Somebody wrote a pilot for it, and people were looking at potential films based on it. This was back in 2010 and in the years following. And then in 2018, it got optioned by Fox. And that gave me the opportunity to expand the Epic Index into a novel, which is now Scorpion.
And so what was your writing journey that led you to writing your first short stories and novels?
Well, I work in the technology industry. As I said, you know, I work for Adobe. I run the design prototyping team there. So I'm an engineering director. But I studied creative writing and literature in college. So, writing has always been part of my life. It's always been something that I've been interested in. I've been writing for as long as I can remember when I was younger, and I would read books, and I was sort of done reading them for the evening, and I try to go to sleep. My mind would just continue the story. I was just really, really obsessed with storytelling in all formats. I played a lot of text-based video games when I was young, and then, you know, other kinds of video games. And I've always liked the story and narrative-based video games. And I've always just been compelled to write stories. So it's something that's always been with me. It's something that I studied in school that I took very seriously. I spent a semester in Ireland studying theater and Irish literature. But I've always been into technology and computers as well. So, you know, and that's where I've made part of my career. So my career is really, I've really had these parallel careers between technology and writing. And then so science fiction gives me an opportunity to bring those two worlds together.
And I'm curious about that. I mean, you said that you work in tech. You work for Adobe as well as writing fiction. How do those two parts of your kind of life intersect, or do you really think of them as intersecting?
Yeah, I do think of them as intersecting, or at least complementing one another. And I can answer that. I can answer that question in a couple of different ways. The first way is that, you know, everything that I think really resonates with people is kind of narrative driven, whether we realize it or not. So, you know, I work very much in product development, product exploration, you know, future product exploration, in the role of a prototyper. And I don't just think about the technology, you know, I think about the way the technology fits into our lives, and the things that the technology can enable. And I think about that in a very, you know, narrative driven format. Right. So for instance, let's say I'm thinking about some new, or my team's thinking about some new features for video editing, or maybe even an entirely new video editing app. You know, you don't think about these sort of features and capabilities in isolation. You think about them as how they'll fit into broader workflows. And those broader workflows are have to fit into people's broader lives. And they have to tell a story. They have to be meaningful. They have to mean something, right? So you're not just building a video editor. You're building something that helps people express themselves and tell their own stories and amplify their own message and share with the world the things that they're passionate about, right? And when you think about that, the narrative of product, then that helps you. A sort of a North Star or a touchstone, and that helps you distill what you're trying to build, you know, eventually down into a set of features, right? So in other words, you don't really start with sort of like the features and then just see where they happen to go. You start with the larger impact you want to have on people's lives, which I think of in a story form. And then I just, you know, and then we distill that down into the actual, you know, implementation of the product. So for me, everything is sort of narrative driven, right? I'm not interested in something that isn't going to help tell stories in people's lives, whether it's technology or whether it's storytelling. So that's the first way. And then the second way is that I've learned that the way the software used to be built is through something called the waterfall method, which is you would spend, you'd have an idea and, you know, you'd get a bunch of people together, you know, maybe get some funding or whatever. And then you would spend, you know, years and years and years building something sort of in stealth mode. Some people still do this, of course. And then you launch it to the world and you hope that people happen to want it. And usually they don't. That's generally what happens. And so, you know, there's a more modern way to develop products and to develop software. And that's, it has different, there are various methodologies and it goes by different names, but it's usually called, you know, like the lean startup method or agile, and
right.
You know, these things complement one another. But the point is that you build something as quickly as possible and you get it in front of people as quickly as possible. And you start measuring people's reaction to it. And, you know, everything is very data driven and you're always putting things in front of people and you're always validating and you're always building on that feedback. So you're never disappearing for years and hoping that something works out. Instead, you're constantly validating, you're constantly pivoting and you're constantly following what's called, you know, the signal that's telling you what customers want. Now I've learned to apply that to fiction as well. So, you know, before I sort of sit down and decide I'm going to write a whole novel, I'll write a short story instead. I sort of learned to prototype the novel with a short story, and I'll start sharing it with people. And, you know, not publicly, but, you know, people I trust and people I know, you know, people like my agent or, you know, a manager I'll share it with, you know, who handles a lot of the, you know, movie and TV work. And I start getting feedback on it very, very early. And then I'll, you know, start making some changes and I start saying, you know, what's interesting? What questions are people asking? What characters do they want to know about more about? What characters do I want to know more about? You know, and that's where I start investing more and expanding into an actual novel.
Well, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories and novels based on your own experiences of writing novels and stories?
I would give people a few different pieces of advice. I mean, one is that, you know, if you want to write a novel, you know, you might try writing a story first. You know, that's worked well for me. It may not. This is something that's very unique to me. I haven't heard anybody else give this advice. You know, if you want to write a novel, first write a short story. But it's worked very well for me. So that's something that you probably won't hear in your creative writing classes. So you might give that a try. And share it early. You know, take the feedback that people give you. Don't be precious about your work. In the same way that a good product manager can't be obsessed over some specific idea. They really have to be obsessed with finding product market fit, not building what they want to build, but building what the customers want. And ultimately we're doing the same thing with books. We're building products. And now look, I mean, that's, if you read one of my books, one of my novels, you know, it's not going to feel like a product. I mean, it's an right. incredibly creative endeavor, but so is product. You know, all these things are creative endeavors. And it takes a tremendous amount of creativity and iteration and focus to really build something that people are going to want to read. And they're going to, you know, they get to the end of a chapter and they're not going to put the book down. They're going to read the next chapter and they're going to stay up late. That's really what I want to do. I would also say, you know,
the future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For me, I write every day. That's something that you probably will hear in your, you know, your creative writing classes or whatever. You know, not everybody does that, but I write every day. I don't have, you know, any kind of word counts, or I don't have any you know, sort of quotas, word count quotas or anything like that. To me, sometimes I write a couple of sentences or a couple of paragraphs in a day, and if they're good, then I'm very happy. So I'd say write every day. Writing doesn't always look like writing. Sometimes writing looks like taking a long walk. Sometimes writing looks like rewriting the same thing 10 times. And that's okay, as long as the story is crystallizing and you feel good about what you're doing, you're bringing real people to life, then you're doing your job.
So are you working on a new novel or new short stories now?
I am. Because I can't not. So after Scorpion launched, really long before Scorpion launched, as soon as, you know, I sort of knew that I was done with edits and, you know, the whole book was finalized, as soon as I knew that I could start focusing on new characters and new things, I just started right away writing something else, because I just have so many stories that I want to tell. So, I wrote a short story, as I explained, right. And I shared it with a few people, and, I got some really good feedback on it. It seems like I'm onto something. People seem to like it. So, it's called Day Shift. I don't know what it'll be called, next week or tomorrow, sure. But right now, today, it's called Day Shift. And I just sort of started cracking it back open and, doing another iteration and expanding the short story into something longer.
I'm curious, have you, I know that Adobe is a very large company. Have you done any work on InDesign? And the reason that I mentioned that is, I'm just curious. I mean, I know that you are traditionally published, but it's interesting that Adobe is working on tools to give people the ability to, self-publish their own, novels and stories if they do want to go that route. I know a lot of people use InDesign for designing their ebooks. I was just curious about that.
Yeah. Occasionally I will prototype or my team will do some work on InDesign. Usually, features that may be shared across multiple Creative Cloud products like InDesign and Photoshop and various other products. So sure. And actually my first novel I self-published, and that's what led to me, being published more traditionally. And I did use all Adobe tools to do that. but I didn't use it for the ebook. So here I'll give your listeners a little bit of advice here.
Sure.
InDesign for me, I would not think of using InDesign as the tool for digital publishing. I would use it as the tool for print publishing. So if you want to do your own paperback version, print version of your book, I used InDesign for that and I used Photoshop for that. That's a whole different skill set than publishing digitally.
Yeah.
And you can now when I was doing this, back my first novel Containment, I originally published myself and now it was republished, traditionally. But I wrote all my own tools to compile EPUB files and I had to learn the EPUB format and specification, all that stuff. You don't have to do any of that stuff now. You can just essentially write it all in Word and use tools to convert the whole thing. So digital, I would recommend using something, just use Word and go from Word to your digital format. For print though, you may have to learn a little bit more, and tools like InDesign and Photoshop would work well for you.
Right. So is there current Hollywood interest in your new novel, Scorpion?
There is. I'm gonna kind of dodge the question a little bit because there's some stuff going on currently and I'm always told, I'm always told to say as little as possible.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Understood.
But there is. I'm sorry for giving such a non-answer, but there is. It's a very, it's a very visual kind of book. I write very, very visually. I write very sort of distinctively. And I think that, I don't do it intentionally to try and option work, but it's worked out well. I mean, I've optioned, several things for TV or film. I've, three things currently in development. And I think partially it's because I do write very visually. I really see the stuff in my mind and I really spend a lot of time. Hopefully not laboriously, but I really spend a lot of time finding just the right words to really conjure these things in people's heads. And I think that it potentially translates well to the screen. So I'm hoping that now that the production is starting to open up a little bit after the pandemic, hopefully we'll see some movement on some of these projects.
Yeah. Great. Well, what novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Let's see. I've read, I recently read I Am Pilgrim by Terry Hayes, which I enjoyed a great deal. I just read a book by a friend of mine, Bethany Morrow, called A Song Below Water, and she just launched the sequel to it, A Chorus Rises, which is a young adult sort of fantasy book. But I read everything. I mean, I read, young adult and science fiction, hard science fiction, sure. Nonfiction, literature. I read all kinds of stuff. So that I really enjoyed. I'm reading The Spy Who Came In From the Cold right now, which is, an old classic.
Yes.
For sure. I've seen several of his, I think every single one of his books has been adapted into a movie, which I just found amazing. So I'm kind of going back and catching up on those books. I sometimes will go back and read, old classics. I just reread, For Whom the Bell Tolls, which is, obviously, fantastic book. And, I just have really, broad tastes. So I kind of every book I pick up is usually something completely different, from the book before it.
Right. That's great. Well, where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your novels?
You can find my website at christiancantrell.com. So that has, plenty of information on my novels, and various other aspects of my life. And I'm also on Twitter, at Cantrell, just, Cantrell. And, I love to, if anybody reaches out, if anybody has a chance to read any of my stuff, I love to chat about it online.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Christian Cantrell, author of the new novel, Scorpion. The book is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Christian, thanks for doing this interview.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Now, stay tuned for a brief excerpt from the audiobook of Scorpion by Christian Cantrell, read by Hillary Huber, available from PRH Audio, wherever audiobooks are sold.
The first thing Kira does before she gets up is put on her legs. They balance on an inductive charging mat beside her bed between a set of steel rails, and the muscles in the young woman's back and shoulders flare as she elevates herself. The nerve terminals in her thighs magnetically align to the pin jacks at the bottom of the carbon fiber cups, and the interfaces constrict until they are securely attached. She has skins somewhere she can roll up over them. And if she were to conceal the seams where the texture-etched urethane and her tissue meet with shorts or a tight skirt, the looks she would get on the street would be of lust and envy rather than curiosity, revulsion, or pity. But Kira lives alone, so the servo-mechanical guts remain exposed, and she does not even bother dressing beyond underwear, a tank top, and her aviator-style metaspecs. She has not left the penthouse suite asylum at the top of the twisted and slowly rotating Infinity Moscow Tower in nearly 4 years. No good reason to even brush her teeth or to close the master bathroom door while she pees. Kira works nights. Her workstation is her studio, and her tools are instruments of fabrication and conspiracy. Proxies conceal her real IP and map to her many identities. Location can be cloaked from the outside world, but real-time interaction cannot be forged, so Kira has become nocturnal. Her boss calls her a change agent, but she knows that's simply a way of distorting the truth. She is an agent of chaos. The first step in her evening routine is to make herself tea. In the kitchen, she activates the kettle, and while she waits for it to boil, she sits down to flash charge the monitor affixed to her wrist. The device cannot be removed, so it must be replenished in place. She interweaves her fingers and leans forward, both arms flat against the mat. A lightning bolt icon appears in the corner of her vision, indicating that her glasses are receiving an ambient trickle charge conveyed through her biomagnetic field. The charging mat is infused with stacks of overlapping coils that are meant to get warm but never hot. And it is not until she smells something caustic and hears an electrical pop that she is on her feet and her legs are backing her away, and she understands that she's been burned. She kicks the cord out of the wall, turns to the sink, and runs her arm beneath a cold stream. She can already see round red welts forming on the inside of her forearm. It hurts, but she is no stranger to pain. Pain is always with her, and she has learned to observe it from a distance rather than letting it in. Kira was her family's primary source of income before the missiles hit, and her parents had her back in front of a computer before she was even out of the hospital. At home, her father carried her back and forth between her desk and the toilet, and her mother changed her bandages and brought her soup and bathed her, and they never spoke of the retaliatory attack her work provoked. It was in the past, and the past could not be changed. Kira learned from an early age that some people do not have the luxury of indulging in yesterday's fears or even today's chronic pain. If any of her personal monitoring systems fail, she is supposed to alert her handlers immediately. Fuck them, she thinks. They refuse to use anything that is not Russian-made, which means half of it is trash. The other half has shit firmware that any script kiddie could hack. They will know her charger is fried when her monitor runs dry and her biometrics suddenly drop offline. Kira slides the patio door open to help get rid of the smell. Usually, she does not check the pigeons until her tea is steeping, but tonight she steps outside into the cold Moscow evening. Once a day, a bird arrives with a new handwritten encryption key wrapped around its leg. Homing pigeons are supposed to be only one way. Once they have established a specific loft as their home, they will deliver messages only in that one direction. To use them again, they must be collected and redistributed. But these pigeons have been genetically engineered to have bifurcated brains with dominance that toggles according to light. They fly in one direction during the day and the opposite direction at night. Like Kira, their handlers have learned to turn their multiple identities into weapons deployed against their many enemies.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.